Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan. Sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
I'm going to wait for it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to wait for it. It's coming. Let's go 305. Let's go wake up on this Monday morning. Weekend's over. Playoff baseball is here. Let's put the Jets away for a second, that miserable performance. Let's move on to the positive nature of the New York Mets. Woo! Big win against Milwaukee. Yeah! Finally, they got one after completely turning into a dead team. After they see Atlanta. Like, what's with that? I talked about it on Saturday. What is with this? It's not even just losing to Atlanta. They see Atlanta in these big moments, and then they fold for a week. They go into the bathroom and crawl into a fetal position. Like, what happened? We saw it 2 years ago where they got swept by Atlanta, and then in the postseason were awful. And we saw it here when they went to Milwaukee and lost the first two games and were lifeless offensively. But thankfully, David Peterson stepped in yesterday and continued what has been an incredible season for him. Pitched great in this game. The offense wakes up. Lindor starts the game with a walk, stolen base. They get a run early, which kind of eases the nerves a little bit. They hadn't had a lead in forever. They go on to add some runs. The offense looks okay. Alvarez, who, you know, slid into the base Friday night and had back spasms. You weren't sure he was going to play again. Comes through with a couple hits. JD Martinez breaks the snide a little bit. They cap off the scoring with a Lindor home run, so you're feeling better about at least his swing. And they get the victory they desperately needed. Arizona, who has collapsed in epic proportion. I mean, you want to talk about how the Mets have faded here a little bit and how the Mets saw Atlanta and folded. I mean, the Arizona Diamondbacks were six games up on the Mets and have completely folded and lost two out of three to San Diego, but they get the victory yesterday. And of course, the one time you need the Braves as a Met fan to get a victory over Kansas City, they lose, and it sets up later today a doubleheader where the Mets will need one victory out of the two in a scenario, and let's just paint it like this. First off, the Mets will start McGill in game one, which I'm not sure there's any confusion. I was kind of, you know, bouncing around a little bit between games. Obviously, I'm watching the Jets. I'm watching football. I was obviously watching the Mets. Didn't hear everything that was said. I was listening a little bit to Evan's podcast, and he said that the broadcast was talking about going for the kill and starting Severino in game one. That is absolute. The Braves aren't doing that. The Braves are throwing Schellenbach at you again and waiting for Chris Sale in game two. The Mets should absolutely do the same thing. You throw McGill in game one, and you have Severino waiting in game two if you need it. And if you don't need it and win game one, you have him ready for the wild card series, most likely against Milwaukee, unless you win the second game, and then it would be San Diego. That is absolutely the right thing to do. McGill starting game one, 100% the right thing to do. Now, let's just get into what this is. This is, and the Mets lucked into it by the nature of the Arizona Diamondbacks unable to handle business. This is as good a situation as you could have hoped for heading out of Atlanta after that Tuesday game where they lost. This is as good a situation as you could have hoped for. The Mets head into a doubleheader, needing one game against the Atlanta Braves, who without question will manage the game if they win game one as if it doesn't matter. The winner of game one clinches. All the Mets have to do is find a way. The worst case scenario is a game two with Severino on the mound with the Atlanta Braves pitching God knows who in a game where they're literally going to celebrate in between clinching the playoffs. They literally might have a champagne bath, put on new uniforms, and go out there and play the second game. Throwing God knows who, pitching zero relievers of importance, and setting up the Mets for a game that if they can't find a way to win, will go down as bad as any collapse in Met history. And I don't care where they were six games into the year. I don't care they were 11 games under 500. I don't care that the manager wants to keep reminding you that nobody believed in them. I don't care that the players, specifically JD Martinez, wants to keep reminding you that nobody believed in them. The fact of the matter is a month ago, or even more, a little more than that now, they won the first two games against Atlanta in a four-game set, and we're about to take over the first wild card. And since that moment, at times they played great baseball, still the best record in baseball for a while over that time stretch. The pitching staff has been unbelievable over that time stretch. But they have fallen out of the playoff contention and now are back in with an opportunity where they only need to beat the Atlanta Braves when the Atlanta Braves will have zero to play for. This is as good a situation as the Mets could find themselves in. And this is a victory that they absolutely have, and I think they will. Because, again, I don't care what anybody says. I really don't. You want to tell me, oh, the Atlanta Braves are still going to play hard? Look, because of the rosters, the Atlanta Braves can't bench the whole team. I get it. And the hitters that are in there are going to try and get a base hit. No one goes to the plate trying not to hit. So is there a hypothetical situation that is somewhat plausible that they lose game one against the pitcher they've struggled with all year and McGill on the mound and that Severino gets blown up in game two with a lineup of mostly Atlanta Braves starters and he just has absolutely nothing? Sure, I suppose. But I don't know who's going to pitch that game. I don't know any bullpen that the Atlanta Braves have to get on a plane and either go fly to Milwaukee or San Diego to play the wild card game tomorrow. There is no way the Atlanta Braves are going to pitch anyone who means anything to them at any real level. This is a game the Mets have to win. They have set themselves up, and that's the other thing. Like, let's just take a second. Because as much as I'll tell you that they have to do it and that I don't care about the record, I don't care about how much they fought back, I don't care. The fact of the matter is they have. And this team has played really good baseball up until the last week, and they've put themselves in this position. And I don't care that the Diamondbacks lost. They have not backed into anything. They have played extremely well. They have pitched extremely well. They deserve to be in this position. They have earned this position. And what this position is quite frankly, all you have to do is beat the Atlanta Braves once and worst case scenario, in a game that means absolutely nothing to them, and their only thought process will be, hooray, we just clinched, and let's get ready for tomorrow. And if under those circumstances, the Atlanta Braves' dominance over the New York Mets still wins the day, and the Mets lose game two of this doubleheader, I'm sorry. As much as I just told you, I believe in this team. They've continued to bounce back. Yesterday, they showed you something with a big win over a team that's played very well against them in Milwaukee. David Peterson's pitched great. They've overall pitched great. They deserve to be in this position. They haven't lucked into it, backed into it. They've earned this spot. If they blow both of these games, it goes down like 1998. It goes down like 2007 with seven games up, with 17 to play. This is a disaster of epic proportions, and it ruins everything. It ruins how you feel about this first-year manager. It ruins how you feel about the first-year GM. It ruins how you feel about OMG. It ruins how you feel about Grimace. It ruins everything. It ruins about Lindor's MVP candidacy. Everything goes out the window. If you can't win one of these two games, Schwellenbach has pitched very well against them. I understand that. Game one is going to be a knock-em-out, drag-em-out fight. And that's really the most compelling thing about this to me is how the Mets handle this, how the Braves handle it. How do you handle the situation? Now, we can get back into why Major League Baseball is a bunch of fools for even allowing the situation to happen. I get it. But how do you handle game one if you fall behind? Like, that's, to me, the most interesting thing about this is, say it's the fifth inning, and McGill gives up a three-run homer. And now the Mets are down 4-0, 3-0 in the fifth inning, sixth inning. Are you treating this like a must-win game and bringing in your top relievers to make sure a three-run deficit stays a three-run deficit? Or do you take your chances, bring in the Adam Ottavinos of the world and the Brazabans of the world, and hope that you can keep it at three and give your offense a chance, but save your relievers that you will need in that second game? I find that fascinating, and it's going to be very interesting and very telling how this manager handled it, because game one is not a must-win game. It's not. They have a cushion here, and you have to win game two. That's the Braves are treating it the same way. It's going to be interesting to see how the Braves handle it. They're not pitching their ace. They're saving them for game two in case they don't need them, and because that's the game where they're up against the wall. This is a very fascinating scenario, but I will just tell you plainly, if they win, this is an unbelievable successful season. And I don't want to say house money, because anytime you're in the playoffs, you should try. Like, it's an opportunity to do something special. And despite how they played the last three games or the last four games, I still think the Mets have a solid chance to do something very special. Even if though they're going to be in a tough situation playing shorthanded in a wild card the day after a doubleheader, which they will have to at least play both games. But if they lose, it's not the fun season we're all hoping it is. If they lose, that's the memory. Failing again to the Atlanta Braves. It can't happen. They can't allow it. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Mike in Brooklyn. What's up, Mike?
There he is. What's going on, C-Mac?
What's up, brother? How are you?
Good, good. I've been about a week or so. First of all, before I get to my Mets point, Rocco, give him a little shout-out, because on Al multiple times, he said 89 wins for the Mets, and everybody thought he was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
He might literally nail it on the head if the Mets win one game tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. Second thing, it's so funny. So everybody's birthday, like all my buddies around the same time. Mine was yesterday. So
happy birthday.
Well, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. But we're all going down to the Baltimore Royals game on Thursday. We got field box seats, because I remember you went to Camden. Field box seats for $219. I was looking, if the Mets play up here, they're almost like $480. Crazy.
For the Mets? Well, the Mets don't have any scheduled home games just yet. They got to win the wild card.
No, but they put them in. Like, if you're looking vivid for, the second round or whatever.
Right, the NLDS?
They're, at 480, the same type of seats. Almost double the price.
Okay.
I was just looking at the crazy.
Gotcha.
All right. So Met point.
Yeah. So what's your take on the Mets?
All right. So I was listening to you on Saturday. I was trying to call him for some reason. Wasn't letting me go or was just busy.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been saying the Fleegs and Rami on the other side for since the start of the season. I don't think the Mets are going to make it. I literally think they're going to mess this up. They're going to lose.
I don't know how they can. I don't know how they can.
What about Saturday? Who pitched Saturday for the Brewers? They had an opener and then Myers.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? How many runs did they score? Zero. Right?
No, I understand.
It's not going to be any different. No, I'm telling you, for some reason, and I'm not one of those Mets fans that are, listen, this year, that's why I think I'm
I do think there's a difference, though, because as much as I understand what you're saying, the Brewers the Brewers had clinched, the Brewers, you know, had set up their schedule, they know they're playing on Tuesday, but they still want to be in good form. Like, I'm not saying that they had anything to play for, and that just because, like, that the Mets shouldn't have won, or I'm excusing the loss, but I'm just telling you. There is a difference between a team that's already won the division and knows they're welcoming someone into their building for a wild card series, still trying to play well and keep things up heading into a Tuesday, because you saw what yesterday was. That's still different than the Atlanta Braves possibly clinching in the game held a half hour before. They're going to clinch. Yeah. They very well could go into the dugout and pop champagne and celebrate for half hour before getting redressed and going out there and knowing that they start a playoff series the next day and that they might have to fly to San Diego to do it. Like, there is... if they win, I think it's San Diego. If they lose, it's Milwaukee. But either way, like, I'm sorry. Like, that's different. That is the ultimate I don't give a damn. Like, that's not the same as the Milwaukee Brewers playing out the stretch trying to fine-tune themselves for the postseason. This is literally, I clinched, and now it's the next day. All the decisions have to be made. Like, that game on Saturday, you could still throw out relievers. You could still play that game to win because you don't have to play again till Tuesday. The Atlanta Braves aren't going to make any decision anywhere near trying to win that game. It's all about the next day.
Listen, I hope you're right, my man. And
it's just sheer pessimism. It's just sheer pessimism. If you're a Met fan and you believe they will blow it, there is no real reason behind that other than they're the Mets and that's what they do. That's the only argument you can make. Oh, they lost three games in a row? Okay, that's baseball, Susan. Everybody loses three games in a row. Were they tight as a drum? Absolutely they were tight as a drum. Do they seem to fold every time they see the Atlanta Braves? Absolutely they do. But they just come off a win, so they're feeling better about themselves. They'll have Severino against a matchup of I don't know whom. And the Braves are going to be on ice, man. They're literally going to be sipping champagne in the dugout. It's a unique situation. This would be a devastating loss. Devastating. Tommy in Astoria. What's up, Tommy?
Hey, Chris. How you doing? Before I make my Met point, I just want to give you one compliment.
Okay.
You know, one of the strengths of Francesa was he was always able to open his show and make a summation of things. And he was spot on. You've got, like, that same gift. You've got this Met situation summed up perfectly. You approach it with, you know, a rationale, which is
baseball. Thank you. Well, no, I mean,
you
listen,
really
there's no other
you have,
because I'm not a Met fan, so I'm not personal to it. I'm rooting for them.
You're spot on. Everything you said is perfect. You're not over the top. You're not trolling. It's spot on. But my only question is, they're playing a doubleheader tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And we all know whose fault that is, right? Brian Cashman.
It is Brian Cashman's fault.
I had to get that.
That's very funny. That was very funny. I like it. You caught me off guard.
It's
Major League Baseball's fault along with the Atlanta Braves. It's both of their faults.
But that was good. You know, I appreciate it. My beloved Yankee brethren, I'm not a Yankee fan, but Brian Cashman's the root of all evil. I mean, you know, I get a kick
There's
out
no
of it.
There's no doubt.
But why couldn't they simply move the first game in a wild card back a day? And then you lose that travel day. Wouldn't the teams rather have that? Because you could still play. I mean, because you realize now what's going to happen. If these teams, if if it splits, right,
mm-hmm.
the winning team, the team has to go to play San Diego, Milwaukee with either a bullpen game or a guy on 3 days rest.
Like, no.
The Mets would have to.
That's not true.
If the Mets win the second game, they have to pitch Severino and McGill, right?
Right. Yeah. No. If not both teams, one team. You're right. But if
right, that, one will, one right, will. Right. Let's say it's the Mets or Atlanta.
Right. If they have to pitch Severino, yeah. I'm not sure.
Right, because you have to pitch Manaea on 3 days rest, and then game two, you're still in the same boat. Quintana would be on 3 days rest. I mean, I just think you can't put, and I'm not just a Met thing, I feel bad for Atlanta too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why couldn't they just move it back a day? What would they lose by that? I know it screws up the TV coverage. I guess that's my answer. It's millions of dollars involved. But why not just do that? I don't get that.
We've been saying it for a while. I think once they realized, I think what saves them here is at least one of those teams. But you're right. If the whoever wins the second game, if there is a split, the person who wins the second game has to figure out pitching for game one of the wild card. But I think the idea that at least one of those teams, it wouldn't have to be both. Like, one of those teams does get to line it up, and that's win that first game. That's what they're going to tell you. And I guess that's the only argument for pitching Severino or really going for it in game one, is that at least you have a pitcher in game two. I disagree. I think you start McGill and save Severino, because then you have a pitcher in game one if you win that game. I guess the thought process is you go out and win game one, and with your best shot, go out there and beat that team, and then you set yourself up with McGill for game one. Where, worst case scenario, you lose that first game, now you don't have a pitcher for game one. But I'll worry about that when I get there. But yeah, I mean, listen, if they split, the Mets are going to Milwaukee, and the Braves are going to San Diego. The only way that the Mets are going to San Diego and flying across the country is if they win both games. But I agree with you. We've been talking about it forever. They should move the day. They should move it. They're not going to. They should. And I think, what was it? The Mets start at 5 o'clock, 5:25. Assuming that's the one in Milwaukee. And again, they would have to sweep both games, which I find hard to believe. I think it's a split. I think it's a guaranteed split. You think the Mets with nothing to pitch for, nothing to play for? Yeah, 5:32. So the Mets most likely are playing at 5:32 in Milwaukee. So they'll finish game two. Say they lose game one, win game two. They get that the first pitch is at 1 o'clock. Say half hour in between 5 o'clock. I mean, you're talking about starting the game somewhere around five, and then 24 hours later they have to be in Milwaukee. Now that's typical. That's a Major League Baseball season. It's not unheard of. And I think that's the other thing Major League Baseball is probably hanging its hat on. Like, hey, you do this every day. That's why we have this wild card three straight days. Like, it's typical baseball. But I agree with you. They should move it. It's putting the Mets in the loser of game one has a major disadvantage heading into the postseason if they win game two. Stu in Brooklyn. What's up, Stuart?
Yeah, good morning, Chris.
Good morning, man. How are you?
All right. Chris, the Jets, that's typical Jets. Typical Jets. They're always finding a way not to get it done. And for them not to being able to score touchdowns,
I didn't think Aaron Rodgers would. I mean, I believe this was his fourth time. I think I read fourth or fifth time not scoring a touchdown. And two of those games, he left the game injured and didn't finish the game. So, I mean, he scores touchdowns. I would not have guessed the Jets would have lost the game all year long where the opponent scored 10 points. I would not have thought that at all, let alone the Broncos.
They cracked this offense to be a machine, a juggernaut. That's what they were saying. Brees Hall, Garrett Wilson. I mean, come on, and the defense with Sauce Gardner and that gentleman named Reed. I mean, where's the defense played his part? They played the game. They held them to 10 points. And the offense can't score more than 9 points?
Correct.
Come on, where was that? And you don't blame, you can't blame it on Saleh. You blame it, like
you can
said.
Blame it on Saleh. Saleh has a lot to do with it, but I think Aaron Rodgers has a lot to do with it. He's the coach on the field. So I think it's the coaching staff. And when I say the coaching staff, I include the head coach, the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, and the quarterback. All of them are the coaching staff.
Right, and I would blame more on the offensive coordinator and quarterback than the defense, because they only scored.
No, no, absolutely. No, you're 100% right. The defense, while had its moments where they're dominating that first half, they allow negative 7 yards of passing. And he had, I think it was seven completions for negative 7 yards. How is that even possible? Like, the defense played well and then had moments where they had that one drive where they allowed the Broncos to run it down their throat for that series. Like, that can't happen. I get it. It's 10 points, but you could still point to everybody in a loss. And I hated the third down play for the touchdown. Like, how do you allow the one offensive weapon they have? Sutton is really the one guy who can beat you. How is he wide open in the back of the end zone? And hell, the quarterback almost threw it too high for a completion. Like, he needed a wide open Sutton in the back of the end zone to even have a chance at scoring a touchdown, and you gave it to him. But you're right, mostly on the offense. And we can argue about whose fault that is and the pre-snap penalties and the comments after the game and all they're, you know, arguing with each other and this or that, fine. I don't care. Aaron Rodgers is not skirt blame just because we all hate Robert Saleh. Robert Saleh's got plenty to do with it. And I know it's a trademark of Robert Saleh teams. And that's fair, and he owns that, and that's on him. And he's done nothing here to make you feel good about him as the head coach. That's fair. But I said last year, so I can't be a hypocrite, because I said last year when we were dealing with all these pre-snap penalties that once you get Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback, those are over. That you have an inexperienced, confused Zach Wilson who didn't think he was going to play this year at the quarterback position, you know, not having control of the offense. And once Aaron Rodgers had control of the offense, you will see the pre-snap penalties go bye-bye. And instead, they were biting him in the ass in this game. That's on Aaron Rodgers. His poor play is on Aaron Rodgers. His inability to build any kind of relationship already with Garrett Wilson is on Aaron Rodgers too. He's the coach on the field. He's the offensive leader. He's part of the coaching staff that helped them lose this game. 888-808-1019. We'll take more of your calls right after this. McMonagle here with you on The Fan.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Manny calling signal, takes the snap, looks left, pops it up, first is wide open, touchdown Giants, and a left corner of the end zone.
Touchdown.
With 35 seconds to go, the Giants regain the lead.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
The other baseball thing, just real quick, back to your Jet and Met phone calls. Just not to talk too much of the Yankees, because I've been on the bandwagon of the last week hasn't meant anything. The Yankees played well enough to have everything pretty much locked up by the end of that West Coast trip. And heading home for these games, the games weren't meaningful. And I don't put a lot of stock into how they were playing specifically with a six-day layoff. I just don't. If they were unbelievably hot, if they won every one of these games, I wouldn't be like, ooh, they're going to carry this right over in the six-game layoff to the postseason. So it is what it is. They have finished. They won yesterday. They finished with the best record in the American League. They'll be the one seed. But I do just want to say that I'm going to say I don't like specifically saying, ooh, I don't want to play this team or I want to play that one, because I do believe the Yankees are good enough to beat every single team, and I do think the Yankees are flawed enough to lose to every single team. I do not think there is a team out there the Yankees cannot lose to. Minnesota is not in the postseason. They blew it before they saw the Yankees. But I have to admit, I hope it doesn't come to bite me in the ass. Very well might. I think the Orioles or Kansas City, as with Kansas City beating the Braves yesterday, sets up, and Detroit losing yesterday. I think the Yankees are now poised to play the winner of the Baltimore-Kansas City series on Saturday. And I would have, in my mind, heading into all of this, for me, the two most dangerous teams that I did not want to play in that first round were the Astros and the Tigers. The Astros, because of who they are, the prestige, what they've done, how they consistently play well, how they've owned the Yankees. They've been in how many, 7, 8 consecutive ALCSs. They are a proven commodity. They throw two lefties at the top of the rotation. And they have an offense that has had a ton of postseason at bats and come through. And then you get to the Tigers, who have the best pitcher in arguably all of baseball in Skubal, who just won the American League Triple Crown with wins, strikeouts, and ERA. Now, you wouldn't face him in game one because he would have had to pitch in the wild card, but you'd see him in game two, and who knows how they would work it. But they've been as hot a team as any. They've been on this incredible run, and they seem like just enough of a scary, crazy, weird team. And I'll always remember and let's be honest, maybe this is just based on Yankees' success and non-success in the postseason, but the Yankees have failed against these two franchises in recent history in the postseason. The Astros, absolutely, and the Tigers. Having lost in 06 in that series, that still haunts my dreams. And that's, you know, the Yankees had the best record in the American League, and the Tigers were the opposite of this year's Tigers, where they were leading the division all year and then blew it to be a wild card team. But still, 06, then 11-12 to the Tigers. Like, there's just something about the Tigers and the Astros that I am much more comfortable as a Yankee fan with the idea of Baltimore or Kansas City. Doesn't mean they can't win, not guaranteeing victory, but I have to admit, heading into it, those were the two teams that put a little bit more fear in me than the Orioles or Kansas City. I think the Yankees got as favorable a matchup in that first round as you could have. So heading into that postseason series for the New York Yankees, I'll just say that. But let's get back to the Mets and Jets. We'll also talk about the Knicks trade at some point. If you can, go back and listen. I did talk about it on Saturday and my feelings on it, but I'll give it to you again here, is that's just an enormous trade for the Knicks and changes so much of who they are. But Jets with an ugly loss, and the Mets about to play two games. And I'm going to try and make it to the watch party. I'm going to try because I love baseball, and truth be told, I kind of texted Evan today against what I normally... I don't typically bother Evan before big games or something, but after Saturday night and watching the Arizona Diamondbacks blow it and watching Kyle Higashioka hit a big two-run home run and then blowing it in the ninth inning, heading into yesterday, I just had to let him know that the Mets have no excuse not to win this. And I texted him. I said, hey, you really should have nothing to worry about. Enjoy yourself today. I was wrong about the Jets, too. I was like, don't you? Jets are going to win, and the Mets are going to figure out a way. There's no way the Mets are not in the postseason. He wasn't happy with me. But I just felt like I had to do it. So maybe I'll come and see him hang out during the watch party that they're having in the afternoon today. They're going to rent out the space in our performance studio. They're going to do the show from there with a big TV with the Met game on. So maybe I'll make an appearance because, listen, I'm pulling for the Mets, man. I am. I want the Mets in the postseason. People think I'm trolling or whatever. I'm not. I want the Mets in the postseason. I don't know why we've gotten sports or not. Sports, politics, it doesn't matter. You either, you know, you hate one side. Like, I am a Yankee fan that has no issue saying I want the Mets to be in the postseason. And if the Mets make it to the World Series against the Yankees, I hope they lose 100-0 every game. Like, I don't get it. I expect them to be in. This would be an absolute disaster. Disaster of epic proportions if they can't win one of these two games. Craig in East Brunswick. What's up, Craig?
C-Mac, love the show once again.
Thank you, buddy.
I drive people around and do driving apps part-time. I've heard nothing but Mets fans today. Oh, if we lose the first game, the Braves are going to stick it to us the second game just because we're the Mets. First of all, the Braves are in the same situation as the Mets. They both need to win one game.
Yep.
Who? I don't know if I'm wrong, but if you won the first game, why would you even tax your bullpen?
You're not going to.
Or even put any of your starters in that game?
Well, you have to
even
play.
To stick it to another team.
No, well, listen, here's the thing. All right, let's just be clear about this. The roster,
yeah,
although
please.
I have to double check. The roster's 28 now in September. It got bumped up to 28. I don't know with a doubleheader if they're allowing a 29th player. I think they are. With a doubleheader, typically you get an extra guy. So you're talking about a roster of 29. They don't have a big enough roster to bench the entire lineup. Like, they just don't.
No, I get
so
that.
There's going to be,
I get that.
There's going to be enough Braves in the lineup where, theoretically, because whoever's playing in the game is going to try. No one's going to lay down. The Braves don't have any incentive to lose this game necessarily, but whoever's up at bat against Severino, which will be game two, for example, is going to try and get a hit against Severino. And if Severino makes mistakes, he can be beat. And whoever they bring in to pitch,
yes.
There is no 29th man for tomorrow. Thank you, Rami.
Well,
so there is no 29th man. So they're going to have a roster. They're going to have a lineup of some of the stars. Like Travis d'Arnaud is probably going to play. I think he's going to want to beat the Mets. Like the players who are going to play want to beat the Mets. The manager is not going to manage as if the game is important. That's where there is. If they have a lead, they're not going to use their best relievers. They don't care. Doesn't mean the Mets can't lose. The Mets can lose. Absolutely they can lose because someone's going to be on the field. Yes, good.
My question is, if you're going, either team, you're going into game two, you already won game one, why would you even, just to stick it to another team, put your ace out knowing you
he's
have
not going to
play in less than 24? Okay, thank you.
They're not going to. Chris Sale is lined up. No. Well, I mean, Mets fans are, look, here's the truth. Chris Sale is not going to pitch. It's that simple. If the Mets, if Schwellenbach and the Braves beat the Mets in game one, Chris Sale, who's lined up for game two, will not pitch. He'll be ready for game one of the wild card series on Tuesday. He's not going to pitch. And they're not going to pitch, Iglesias. They're not going to pitch their best guys knowing they have a game. They have a wild card playoff game tomorrow. Now, does that mean the Mets can't lose? No, because you can't bench everybody. If they could, they would. But here's the scenario. This is not a team that's clinching. Like, because the argument is, well, the Kansas City Royals had nothing to play for and they beat the Braves. The Brewers had nothing to play for and they won 2 out of 3 against the Mets. The San Diego Padres had nothing to play for and they won 2 out of 3 against the Diamondbacks. All of those scenarios are teams with nothing to play for and teams with everything to play for. And the Braves took 2 or 3 but lost yesterday. The Mets lost 2 or 3 and the Diamondbacks lost 2 out of 3. So if that's the thought process, then yeah, I understand. But to me, it's still different because those are teams who had clinched and are still like, they had a day before to rest guys. You want to rest guys forever. It's a different scenario. You still want to play well. You want to feel like you're tuned up and playing well into the postseason. You didn't start big-time pitchers, and you wouldn't have used your top bullpen guys. But there's still just a different feel to it than the Atlanta Braves, who will win game one and celebrate, storm the mound, jump up and down, go inside in the clubhouse and possibly pour champagne all over themselves for a half hour, and then get dressed and come out and play game two. It's a complete relief letdown. We won, we clinched. A half hour later, go play baseball. It's a completely different thing. It's not wake up the next morning and go play baseball. It's literally clinch, celebrate, go play baseball. There is a, without question, a personal just exhale, excitement, celebratory mood that they're not going to be up the same way for a game two. They're not going to be like, all right, now let's go kick the Mets' ass. I just don't think so. I don't think they'll have that. They'll go out there, and once they're in the game, they'll want to play, and they'll try and hit. They're not going to go up there and, you know, to be the Bugs Bunny and just 1-2-3, 1-2-3, swing and miss, swing and miss, swing and miss. They're not going to, like, forfeit the game. Right. I mean, they're going to play the game. And if Severino hangs a breaking ball, it might get hit out of the ballpark. And if Severino walks two guys in front of that hanging slider, it could be 3-0 in the first inning. That, of course, that's on the table. But the idea that the Braves are going to relish the idea of knocking the Mets out, if they do it, I'm sure they will. If they pull it off, they'll love the idea they knock the Mets out. But I'm telling you, I find it hard to believe that these guys who just celebrated, poured champagne all over themselves, had the relief of accomplishing it and didn't blow it when they were perceived. You want to talk about the Mets and their perception of nobody believing them? The Braves, injury or not, have owned this division. They're supposed to be one of the best teams in baseball. This would be a horrendous season for them if they don't make the postseason. Having that moment of finally making it and knowing they've done it and they don't have to worry about blowing it. I have a hard time believing the motivation to go, now, let's go stick it to the Mets. Like, I just don't see it. Doesn't mean they'll roll over and die, but they're not going to have that. Like, if they showed up last game of the, like, last series of the year, if the Braves had clinched like Milwaukee did, and for the last series of the year, in come the Mets. Braves already clinched the division. In come the Mets. And the Mets, if they lose 2 out of 3, could go home and miss the playoffs. They need to win 2 out of 3 against Atlanta. And you want to tell me, hey, I know the Braves have nothing to win for, but they're going to try and stick it to the Mets. That makes sense. They've already clinched. They're fine-tuning themselves for the playoffs. They're going to throw somebody. They have a lineup they got to play. Oh, the Mets come in with an opportunity to knock the Mets out? All right, let's do it. Let's use that as a motivation to play well the last 3 games of the year. That makes sense. A doubleheader the day before they have to go fly to San Diego or Milwaukee and clinching halfway through the day? I'm sorry. It's a completely different scenario. Kenny in Queens. What's up, Kenny?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Must be nice being a Yankee fan. So anyway,
it has its moments. I mean, a lot of the fan base disagrees with me, but I think you're right. It is pretty good to be a Yankee fan.
Being a diehard Mets fan, if they don't, they have to adjust to Schellenbach tomorrow. I mean, they just faced him 6 days ago,
mm-hmm.
and he dominated the Mets.
Yep.
The past 2 times he faced them, they have to adjust.
Yep.
How about make contact, swing? I mean, you have to. You can't take the strike.
It depends. You go into the game, it depends. If he's throwing strikes early on, then I agree with you. There's nothing wrong with being aggressive.
You have to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to that. I'm more curious about who plays. Like, who do we think?
The kid has to play. Vientos has to play.
Well, obviously, Vientos has to play. I mean... I'm talking about Taylor. I'm talking about Lindor at shortstop. You got JD Martinez back in there. Winker.
I would put him in. I would definitely put him in. You know, with the experience, whatever. This is do or die.
Well, of course. Well, who do you think gives you the better? Who gives you the better option? Do you Winker or against the righty or JD Martinez, who just got out of his slump but was 0 for his last 36 before then?
Yeah, exactly.
Or,
been 0 for
or yeah. Or do you feel like you feel... the idea of doing what you did previously and going with the Acuna at shortstop and DHing Lindor? I mean that's... I think you probably play Lindor at shortstop if he feels up to it, but I don't know. That's what I'm more concerned about than approach.
The kid plays for a good shortstop, Acuna, but this is... I want my leader out there. I would like to see Lindor...
Oh, well, he's going to play
short.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, play short, I guess. Listen, he showed some. He hit a home run. He stole, I think, 2 bases in the game. So he's shown the ability to look healthy enough to play. But I don't know what you do in this first game, and then really even more than the lineup, right? Because whatever the lineup is, hopefully, you're right. They got to make adjustments. Now they've seen him, and this is back to back time seeing him. So you would think hopefully they have a better approach and you can have better at bats. Having seen him just a week ago. But to me, it's on the most interesting question for me is how Mendoza handles the bullpen. Now, I had no problem. A lot of Met fans I saw on Twitter had a reaction to pitching Diaz in the ninth. I don't have a problem pitching Diaz in the ninth because you're not going to need him for the two games. Like, the only scenario you would need Diaz twice is if he blows the save in game one. So, I mean, that's, I guess that's theoretically possible. But he hadn't pitched in a bunch of days, and he has proven, like most pitchers, like, I don't know if you want to go into these two games and Diaz hasn't pitched in 7-8 days. Like, I don't know if you wanted to head in that way, because I'd be really nervous in his first appearance. I was kind of fine with getting him in, making sure he got some, got an inning under his belt or just some pitches under his belt. And I'm not so worried about having to pitch him twice today, because theoretically, if I get the best of him, I only need him once. And then so that leads to the bullpen question. Like, now Maton has pitched back-to-back days. You obviously, if you need him, you'll pitch him, but how effective is he going to be pitching his third day when typically pitchers aren't asked to do that anymore? That's one of the rules that everyone has pretty much established. Relievers don't go 3 days in a row. So now you're asking him to go 3 days in a row, so I was surprised he pitched in the game yesterday. But how do you handle being down in this game? Game one. How do you handle being down 2 runs in the sixth inning? How do you handle being down 3 runs in the fifth? Right? Say, you know, McGill gets knocked out in the fourth inning. You're losing 5-3 in the sixth. Who are you bringing in? Are you bringing in Maton? Are you bringing in Buto? Are you bringing, even though he hasn't pitched, and are you bringing in relievers to keep the game close, knowing that you'll need to score runs to win the game, and then you'll need these guys in the second game? Or do you just throw in some of your lower-end relievers and hope that you come back and win? And if not, you have your guys lined up for a game two. Like, I don't know how you play it. I don't know. Like, I understand the initial thought process of let's go out and win game one and not worry about game two and not put us in a position where we have all the pressure in the world on us to beat the Atlanta Braves. But at the same time, like, if I find myself, like, if they have the lead, then yes, absolutely. You have the lead, that's an easy one. You're up 5-3 in the sixth, seventh inning. You go to your guys. You go to try and win that game, no doubt. Because then you're saving your starting pitcher for game one. You got Severino lined up for game one of the wild card. That's easy. What do you do if you're losing? Do you treat this game as a must win? Do you treat this game as I got to keep it close? Or do you treat this game as, well, listen, I got to have faith in some of these other guys because I still have a safety net in game two, and I'm not going to waste these guys protecting a deficit hoping my offense scores runs when I'm going to see the best of the Braves bullpen as they try to secure a victory to save Chris Sale for their game one. Like, I don't know. That's going to be very fascinating to see how Mendy handles that situation. Because I could see the argument both ways. I could see the argument, hey, I'm not leaving this up to one game. Anything could happen. Severino could not have it. I got to try and win this game. Or I could see the argument of, hey, I'm losing. I'm not going to give up, but I'm not going to pitch my top guys because I need them for game two.
But it goes both ways. If you exerted all in the first game,
yeah,
then you don't have the, and you still lose.
Yes.
Then you don't have those guys for game two.
Right. Well, so but you have to do it with the lead. You have no choice. You got to try and go win that first game. It's not, you can't just say, hey, I have game two, so I'm not pitching my guys no matter what scenario I'm in. No, I mean,
correct. Like, but if it's you're down one, and so you pitch your best bullpen arms,
right,
and then you still lose,
right,
then you're really in trouble.
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying, Rami. I'm saying that I don't think you can, like, if you're losing, can you risk the idea of holding a deficit? You'll need your offense to come back, and if your offense doesn't come back, you lose a game, and now you've gone through your top-end bullpen when you need them for the game, too. That's the conundrum. I don't know how the manager will handle it. Because, yeah, if you pitch all your best guys and lose, now look, it's balls to the wall. It's the final game of the year. You're going to pitch them again. It's just a matter of how much confidence you have they'll be effective doing something they typically don't do, pitching twice in a day. You still go to them. I don't think there's a question. It's not like, oh, now, if Buto pitches in game one, it's not like, oh, now Buto's off limits for game two. You got to throw him out there. It's do or die. Same thing with Diaz. Diaz pitched yesterday. If Diaz blows game one or you bring him in to secure a one-run deficit in the ninth, if that's how you choose to handle it, to give yourself a chance, in the eighth, because obviously it's in Atlanta, but if you bring Diaz in the eighth inning to keep a one-run deficit, a one-run deficit in the eighth to give yourself a chance in the ninth, and you don't do it, you still pitch Diaz in the second game of the doubleheader, but now How much confidence do you have he'll be as effective in game two? So these are very interesting questions. I can't wait to see how they handle it. Hopefully they win by, you know, hopefully they score six runs in the first inning and you don't have to worry about any of this.
Hopefully
but,
it's tied in the first
well,
game of the night.
I mean, that's what I want. I mean, for Met fans, I understand Met fans don't want that. But yes, I want the drama. I want the juice. I want game two to mean everything for the Mets. Like, I'll be totally honest with you. I am rooting for the Mets, but I'm also a baseball fan.
Lose by one in 11 innings in game one.
Oh, right.
Dreams.
Again, well, I suppose, again. But then the Braves are going to do nothing to win game two. The Mets have no excuse.
But this makes it even better if they're facing like the last guy on the Braves rotation and it's game two and the Braves have nothing to lose for. All the pressure's on the Mets. It's going to make it even more fun.
No, I agree. I agree. And that would be like watching Evan Robertson that second game. I almost want to come here just to see it live.
So I'm actually video debating. So how's that going?
I have no idea what they're doing video wise. I've been told. I listened to Evan's podcast and we got an email about it. I believe.
Still not on the email list.
Now, I don't know. He made it sound like they're doing the show from the media center or whatever you call the production studio, whatever they call it back there. It's like a room. It's a room with chairs and a little bit of a stage. So I think they're doing the show from there with the TVs on in that room and food. So you can go in there, watch the show, watch the game, hang out. Live studio audience. Like a live studio audience for Tiki and Evan. They're definitely playing the games in there, and there's definitely going to be food here. I'm not 100% positive whether or not Tiki and Evan will be in here or they'll be in there. But the performance studio, that's what it's called. I think they're in the performance studio, but there's a chance they're in here. But I am possibly avoiding like just being able to function as a human and giving up on my sleep to come here and just put my eyes on Evan Roberts, having to sit through and do a show. And let's be honest, because the game's going to be on in the middle of the opening of their show, and he's going to have to sit here screaming, yelling about Robert Saleh and the Jets and how disgusting of a loss that was while the Mets are playing for their lives.
4 o'clock Joe Beningo.
Like I have 4 o'clock Joe Beningo. Yeah, I have to. I'm definitely going to listen to it. I'm debating on whether or not I'm going to forego sleep and come here.
Can you imagine
watch
4
it.
O'clock? It's going to be the beginning of the second game. The Mets had already lost the first game.
Right.
Joe's screaming about the Jets.
Yes, that would be a Joe.
Mets game two.
That would be a Joe. I have a feeling Joe will think they'll lose game two. That's my suspicion will be Joe will be pessimistic and guess that they'll lose game two. 888-808-1019. All right, 2 hours down, one more to go. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. We still got to talk a little bit of the Knicks trade as they trade for Karl-Anthony Towns. That's their superstar. That's the big move. They get rid of Julius Randle. They get rid of DiVincenzo. The team feels completely different, but is it better? 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you till 5. We'll come back to a little bit of Knicks, but still, Jets, Mets rule the day. Jets with a hideous performance. The Mets getting ready for a doubleheader against their nemesis, the Atlanta Braves, with their playoff livelihood and this fun season on the line. 888-808-1019. Update, quick break. I'll be back after this.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.